welcome to the Sedia Awesome Podcast. I'm Mina Rizuki, and the person who's making all that noise is none other than Gab Marcotti.
What noise?
Oh, banging on stuff and, you know, the usual stuff. And, of course, Nikki Bandini. Guys, we have so much to talk about. You know, I wish that we could have started this pod in nicer circumstances, but obviously I only had...
Circumstances aren't nice.
Well, no, I only had 3 hours sleep because of the anger that I experienced yesterday. We've had a pleasant conversation.
She means specifically nicer circumstances for you, Ventini.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So, for those who didn't know, Juventus lost
And you lived
to Lyon.
In another planet, clearly.
Yeah. Juventus lost 1-0 to Lyon. Well, can I just go? I'm curious about the mentality of Juventini, because Andrea Agnelli came out on Monday and he said, look, you know, we just care about, I mean, he said a lot of things. I don't want to take him out of context if you're listening, Andrea or Claudio. But he said, you know, Juventus's raison d'etre, the DNA is about winning. It's what we always want to do. And that comes first before playing pretty football or whatever to us, right? We're not an entertainment brand in that sense. Or he said the entertainment that we get, it comes from winning, right? If those two penalties at the end had been given, if things had panned out differently, if Juventus had put in exact same performance, but won that game 2-1, would you still be as angry about what you saw?
Probably less so, if I'm honest, because obviously winning is all that matters, and I do believe in that. That's why I am a Juventus fan, and I don't believe in entertaining football.
Just to clarify, for those who don't know, Juventus, this is something that I don't even think that this is, I don't know the exact history of this at Juventus, but I feel like it's something they've co-opted over the last 10, 15 years. The famous line from, the legendary. Boniperti said it, but Boniperti didn't come up with it. There's a Green Bay Packers, coach, Vince Lombardi, who said, winning isn't everything, it's the only thing.
Don't Manchester United have a version of it as well? Like every like big club is like taking it and taking it.
But the genesis is still Vince Lombardi, yeah? Okay. Alright, just wanted to clarify that.
Listen, I think that I would
still... He may
still...
have got it from someone. I don't know. Like, he might have got it off his high school coach.
Don't be dissing me.
You never know. Maybe his priest. Okay, all I'm saying is that I...
His priest said that to him.
You never know. Maybe he was really into sports.
Yeah.
Point is that I feel like I'd be less angry had they managed to get those penalties. But my feeling is that, like, we had a very good thing going with Allegri. And you decided to take him out because, and I agreed with this, that it all got a little bit stale towards the end, that they didn't make the use of Ronaldo, that it had gotten to the stage where it wasn't just unentertaining football, but rather like dim, you know, bad football at this point. Except this is worse. So my problem with this is that, you know, you guys decided to stage some revolution. You tried to do it by bringing in Ronaldo to motivate this team into something. It didn't work out for you. Then you decided to change the coach and it still hasn't come into anything. Maybe what you really needed was two good midfielders. Yeah. But I think that what has made me so angry about all of this is Sarri is not a Juve coach. And I didn't know that until I was almost convinced of it now. And his pre-match conference when he said, oh, the fact that people think we're favorites, I think they're making fun of us. And I just wanted to turn around and it was the most embarrassing thing you can say.
I think he said we're one of 10 or 12 teams who can win it.
Out of 16.
Out of 16. So basically the only ones who maybe can't are like Valencia and apparently maybe Lyon, who actually probably now have a very good chance of going through. And to say that the financial revenue is what makes the difference, then you know what? Why don't we just sit back, let Manchester City take on PSG and not bother making up the numbers, because that's apparently all the only
what
two
if
sides.
I don't even know if City is the right thing.
Yeah. Well, whoever it is, but if you're not obligated to win now that you have Cristiano Ronaldo, are you joking? And let me just tell you something. If you're a winner, do you come in and say, oh, I mean, you know, they're making fun of us? No, you absolutely do not say that. You believe in your team and you believe in your chances. And by all means, like, I understand taking pressure away, but this is to another level of embarrassment. Right. I can't sit there and talk about Antonio Conte and the words that he used when he was in charge of Juve that I think had a detrimental effect on them in the Champions League. when he came out and said it's between us and Galatasaray for second place to qualify out of that group. I hated him for saying that at the time because he thought Real Madrid were convinced winners of the group. And that was just something so small by comparison to what I think the damage that Sarri has now inflicted. Allegri would have never done that.
Well, I did. I think since you brought up Sarri, let's stick to Sarri's communication, Sarri's comms, because I think this is definitely, I mean, that's what you focused on here, and I think it is right. Obviously, if you win, it doesn't really matter what you say, and if you win convincingly, it matters even less. This is something that has dogged him, even at Chelsea, he had situations where he was so blunt and so honest. And in this case, I don't even think he was being blunt and honest, he was just being silly.
Yes.
After the game, he did a two-way with Sky Italia, and Fabio Capello made the point that your build-up play in this game, and for those who don't know, Juve didn't have a single shot on target. Your build-up play was so slow. You looked so lethargic. It was so predictable. He's like, I was watching City and Real Madrid and the other one, and they were going three times as fast as you. And he says, what's the problem? And Sarri replies, and I think he said this in the press conference afterwards as well. Sarri came out and he replies, yeah, I noticed too that it was slow, which is weird because in training the day before, they were going really fast. I don't quite know. Maybe I'm the problem. Maybe they're the problem. Now, I love honesty. I hate all the code speak and all the stupid crap that people say. I hate even more that people are supposed to be analysts who just parrot and repeat everything people say. So maybe you're right. Maybe you don't know what the answer is. But this was one situation where you need to work a little better at explaining. You need to think about it. It is literally your job. If they're going fast in training, I mean, leaving aside the obvious fact that in training, you're not in a game situation. But when your team plays fast, and they have played fast at times and with accuracy and precision, I think of the Roma game of the Coppa Italia, but I need to come up with a new example because I keep bringing up that example.
The level of the opponent at that point.
Yeah, although Roma, Leon, I don't think there's a huge difference, though. But I mean, just focusing on Juve, they were moving the ball quickly regardless, right? But when it's been happening for so long, you're the coach. You've been coaching for 40 years. You should have some ideas. You should have some better theories if you're going to come out and say something like that. Otherwise, just say, well, we had a bad day. Move on. It's 1-0. We can turn around, right? So you either say nothing. But once you go in and you admit that, oh, yeah, we were playing too slow, you got to give me some kind of fix or some kind of reason.
I think it's worse that he admitted that he can't seem to get into his players' heads to move that ball faster. The fact is he's basically admitting the players are not even listening to him at this point, or that his instructions are not being followed the way that he has trained them to. And I think for me, that's a bigger problem because we went back to this. Does he have the authority? Are they listening to him? Because it doesn't seem like it.
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting contrast there between two managers who've been mentioned, which is Conte and Sarri. Of course, we'll get to it later, playing against each other this week. Conte absolutely does this often. He does done it at Inter this season where, like, he talks his team down to try and make them out as an underdog even when they aren't. Like, he'll sort of try and play as an underdog. But with Conte, I've always felt like it's just like he has this slightly, like, almost because he puts so much pressure on himself to win the whole time. Like, he's trying to play down the pressure externally, even though internally, like, he knows that he's not going to take losing well. Like, he's always trying to do it externally. With Sarri, it feels different. It's the same sort of, I get the comparison you're making. They're both saying things that do down their team before situations unfold. With Sarri, it feels like he sincerely...
It was more like Conte at Juve rather than Conte at Inter.
Sure, but yeah. Like, I don't think Conte, even if he was sort of talking like that, even if he was talking like that externally, I feel like Conte inside that changing room was still
like, we can win this,
furiously telling his... Not they can, that they had to. I still feel like the message to his players, even if it didn't unfolding the pitch, was like, there is no option of failure here.
Then why would he have left? Whereas, if he genuinely thought that?
Why would he have left? Because he wanted things from the board and they wouldn't give them to him.
Oh yeah, I think it's because he never believed in his team, really.
But I do think with Sarri, like, sometimes he gives off this weird lack of confidence. And I don't know if that comes from his path of how he's become a very successful manager. You know, he is an underdog. He actually is an underdog. He's not Antonio Conte, who had a great footballing career and went to be a manager. Sarri came from circumstances which weren't things expected of him. But I feel like the way he talks, that insecurity feels genuine. Like, it feels like he actually doesn't believe
it. Well, then you're not the right fit. Well,
I agree with you, actually. Yeah, but I thought from the beginning his face didn't fit. That's always been... That is not a new question. That was something we asked, I think, at the very first day of the season on this podcast. Does Sarri's face fit in Turin? And I've never
thought it did. That's very fair. Like, I don't have an issue with the guy having genuine insecurity. I mean, people who are not insecure, 99.9% of the time, are freaking idiots and morons and deluded people, right? If you're not insecure, you've got no ability for introspection. That's the reality. The difference, though, is how you show it and when you show it, right? And I think what this guy needs is media training.
Yeah.
And it goes beyond that. It's not just that, but just stupid things he said in the past over time. But I want to turn it back to the players a little bit, because I take your point, Mina, that maybe the players aren't listening to him. He can't get them to move the ball quickly. That said, his players aren't idiots. They're supposed to be leaders. There are veterans in there, people like Bonucci and whatever else. It should be pretty obvious that if I can move the ball quickly and accurately, I will get myself into a position to shoot on goal and score goals, and I'll get the ball to Dybala and Ronaldo quicker, and they can do something, right? So the question is, are the players choosing to play slowly? Like, why can't they figure it out for themselves that it's in their interest to do that? Why can't they figure out for themselves, especially Bonucci, that, hey, you know what, maybe don't go and just retreat 30 yards so, like, that your butt is in Chesney's face all the time. Yeah. Because your team isn't comfortable playing that way, defending like that anymore. You need to be more aggressive. Wait, you need to move the ball quicker.
Who are these players? That this is what I'm trying to explain. So for me, for a long time, I've not been a fan of Pjanic. I've said this on this pod several times. The other person that I wasn't a fan of was Dybala, who I think Sarri has is the only player he's managed to actually develop. But yet both of them, my issue under Allegri was that at times they didn't read the play accurately enough, and when they were hassled by the opponent, they didn't know how to overcome that very well enough. Whether it was contact when it came to Dybala, or just when it comes to Pjanic, it's energy or whatever it is. You look at the rest of the game, and the rest of the people there, Bentancur. I mean, you can't say he's a leader. Like, he is a guy who still needs instructions.
I take your point about the failings of the individuals, but I'm saying
there isn't the leaders that you're talking about anymore. That's what I don't believe.
We're talking about playing fast. Right. Yeah. Ramsey was at Arsenal for many years.
No, you're saying as in they should be well equipped enough to read the situation on their own and move the ball faster.
It's such an obvious thing in football, right? I mean, I'm sure some of these guys are idiots. Others, though, are not, right? They watch football. They've played football all their lives. It's not exactly a novel concept that if I play really, really slowly at 2 miles an hour, the opposition can get into position and I won't be able to play through them.
Yes,
right?
But fear is the factor here.
You think they play slow because they're scared that Leon's going to take the ball off them, and it's a confidence thing?
I think they don't feel safe in their formation. I think that what they felt safe in is to take advantage of opponents before, and the fact that they had the superiority complex before was something that was instilled in them because they believed in themselves. I think right now they don't really understand what they're doing. They're sort of halfway in between being an Allegri team and halfway. It's just simply, the fact is, when they lose possession, they fall deep. It's absolute antithesis to what Sarri wants. The fact that they continue to do that shows that they don't really feel safe in his tactics, nor do they believe in them entirely, but they're also trying to do something that helps him because, you know, they can't play the Allegri way without Allegri. So now they're just stuck in between, and that fear and insecurity is causing all sorts of problems for them, in my opinion, which is why you get these nonsensical performances. Ronaldo giving halftime speeches that reach no one. We're asking Cuadrado to all of a sudden be a good player. Why is he even chosen to play in the Trident?
So Cuadrado, I actually think, has a massive...
Why was he not the right back? Danilo exactly. Was a better option.
I think Cuadrado has a massive value to this team, but it's not playing where he played against Leon. He should be at fullback.
Absolutely. And Bernadeschi sitting on the bit on the bench.
And for the record, because I know he hasn't been good, frankly, a lot of the time, but I thought that when Ramsey came on in this game, I think he was the player who brought some of that speed to the game.
And we saw that against Spal. Why would you choose Rabiot again? Rabiot has not shown any sort... He doesn't do anything. He doesn't defend well. He doesn't attack well. What is the point of Rabiot?
But this is really interesting. This is genuinely like the crux of what we're talking about here, I think, because you know I disagree with you on Pjanic as a player. I don't disagree with you on Pjanic's recent performances. They've been bad. So my opinion is, I know Pjanic is a good player. I believe that Aaron Ramsey's a good player. I haven't watched as much Rabiot as some people have, but a lot of people who I trust tell me that he's capable of being a very good player.
He's a lot
I have not seen it really at all.
Promises.
He's had a lot of
thing.
Promise since he was 15.
But this was it's a group of midfielders that was good enough. And Bentancur I've seen play well.
He can play well.
And this is a group with enough promise in it collectively that you felt comfortable as a squad saying goodbye to Emre Can in January, right? You didn't even put him in your original Champions League squad, okay?
Yes.
So I'm not saying this is a perfect midfield because I'm sure it isn't. And I think in terms of balance, they could do much more. But this is on the manager. Like, there is enough talent in this squad to be
absolutely
a lot better than the seventh best team in France that's missing half its team.
I mean, to be very honest with you, that's what it is. Everyone comes out and be like, oh, come on. But Arteta, she didn't exactly create a great team. No, you know what? They have their midfield problems, and I get that. But this is a team with a world-class attack. We're talking about one of the best, you know, center forwards in the world in Higuain. Dybala, who's considered a great talent. I know you're
it depends
not,
where you set the bar at best. Okay. If you say, like, top 20, top 10, yeah. top 5. But
a top 10 centre-forward. Ronaldo, obviously.
He's not in the top 10 centre-forward.
You don't think so?
Higuain? Yeah, no, maybe at some point, but not now.
Really? Who would you put above five? Like, who's above six?
Who I would have? Right, just rattle through this very, very
quickly. Yeah, let's go really quickly with this.
I would put Lewandowski. I would put Aguero. I would put Firmino, if you want to consider him centre-forward. I would put Lukaku. Yeah. I would put Mbappe.
Yeah. I'd pick Lautaro ahead of him right now.
Oh, yeah, easily.
I'd pick Harry Kane ahead of him.
Aguero.
I said Haaland, so we're already at nine.
Yeah.
Haaland is better. It's a year.
Rodrigo, Rashford, Luis Suarez.
What are we comparing? Are we comparing who I would pick if I was picking a team from the world right now, or are we comparing careers? Of course Higuain's had a great career.
Today, do I think
he's going to contribute more? Yeah. No.
Okay, either way, a really good centre-forward, okay, Ronaldo, who's the world's best player, and a world-class defence. We're talking about an 80 million centre-back, who is the captain of Ajax,
Should be.
He's also very, very young and is more of a long-term project. But
I mean, Demiral was better at this point. And then
Demiral
we've got Bonucci and Alexandro. I mean, Danilo, I think, is like the biggest fraud in football. I don't know what's going on. He just goes around to all the big clubs and collects trophies.
This Alexandro thing that, like, I don't see it. But, yeah, look, there's no question. We're all in agreement that they should do better. I also think, to some degree, though...
Play Bentancur and Pjanic's plays, please.
Whatever it is, and this is going to have a longer-term... Juve, and Mina doesn't like talking numbers, but Juve put out their financial results and their half-year results, and they'll get better towards the end of the year because they'll get prize money. Some of it is accounting, but they're down $76 million. Mm. That's not good. And... part of that, obviously, they'll get money back from Sean and so on, but they're in a situation where they're relying on what you call player trading.
Yeah.
They've increased direct commercial revenues tremendously over time, but it's not catching up because they're just spending so much on wages.
Did you see
all those free transfers who aren't free?
Yes. Do you see how much Rabiot? These guys are being paid? Sixth highest earner in the league is Rabiot. Seventh is Ramsey. Eighth is Pjanic. Does that midfield deserve this?
When you're seeing
SMS and Luis Alberto doing wonders for Lazio,
you have to. I always say this: like, I don't disagree with your basic point, but like your fundamental point. But like, when you look at a free transfer's wages, like, you can't look at them like the same as the wages of someone else who signed for a transfer fee, because that is baked in. That is what you're paying for. Is partly the lack of.
But it's going to have a knock-on effect.
Yes, it will.
Because then you have to go and spend $15 million on commissions to get the guy, and then it's extremely difficult to go and sell him because he's got an enormous salary. And I think these are all things that
needed to be thought about.
That they need to think about. Right. What I want to throw this out there, and obviously we're all in agreement that Juve can... Oh, sorry, no, first, the two penalties, because I think we need to mention that.
Oh, okay.
Cristiano and Dybala. Cristiano, no? It's
Mina's
a no
got,
for
Mina's
me.
Got a face in I'm very... It's very straightforward
I'm on
me.
The fence with no this, for so I don't know.
I think it was definitely a Dybala penalty. To me, the defender... With Ronaldo, no, not at all.
Yeah.
With Dybala, to me, that's a hard arm across the chest of a forward, even if he's already a little bit off balance. You can't do that as a defender.
I'm with you.
And that should be a penalty.
The other thing, too, people say, like, oh, but he's going backwards. Yeah, because if you're in the box and there's a defender behind you, it's a natural thing to go back to try to create space.
Yeah.
So... and then the guy drags him back.
So you definitely think Dybala is a penalty?
I think so, yeah. I think, you know, that should have been, it wouldn't have been a draw.
Doesn't mean they deserve it.
Doesn't mean they deserve it at all.
It's
but
a penalty.
But the other interesting thing in the context of Serie A and Comis and all Juve's history with referees is Maurizio Sarri, just bad comms, right? Maurizio Sarri came out afterwards and he's like, yeah, those two penalties, well, those are the two penalties that we don't get in Europe. and that we would have gotten in Italy. Now,
oh my God.
I know what he's seen, what he's, I
know. Sally said this, I yeah. didn't know this.
I know what he means, but you can't say stuff like that because it's like giving all your enemies in Italy, of which there are many, in light of your history, it's like giving them a freaking hammer to beat you over the head with. You can't say things like that, even if you believe them.
You know, we talk a lot about the midfield choices and the, how much they chose to pay players, but really, Sarri was the man that they chose to take this team on, considering the way he speaks, considering all the faux pas that he's done, considering the fact that he has a style of play and there's not a single ball player in that midfield other than Pjanic, who never will reach the mythical figure of 150 passes. It is abysmal.
Super quick question, because I know everybody wants to move us on from this. Are they going through, yes or no?
We all said yes, eh? Nobody's disputing that.
I don't know. I don't know.
I don't know.
I honestly don't.
All right, I'll give you my percentage, 99%.
Okay.
I really hope you're right, but right now I'm just watching snails, so I don't know.
So what do you say? Take a minute, think about it. Nikki?
I'm going to go 60-40 they go through. I think it's in the balance.
Yeah, I think it's 60-40. I agree with Nikki. Yeah.
All right. One other thing, just because we talked a lot of sorry before we move on. Juve have always sent the message, and Andrea Agnelli spoke on Monday, and he doesn't. He never speaks or gives interviews. He just goes in front of a microphone and gives speeches, right? You can kind of understand why he doesn't do it. I don't blame him for it. When he does speak, he's actually pretty interesting. And I just want to touch upon two things that he said. One of them, sorry, related. And the other one more broadly about Serie A. The Sarri related one was this, right? So they asked him to evaluate. He said, look, we're going to evaluate things at the end of the season. We always evaluate them at the end of the season. I don't think he was quite being as honest as he might have been, but that's fine. That's his job, right? He's Sarri's boss. What do you think it would take for them to fire Sarri?
Getting knocked out?
I mean, if they do get knocked out, my hunch is they would wait till the end of the season. And maybe even if he wins Serie A, depending how they play, if they don't see progress, they let him go.
I just think if they lost, say they lost, we'll get to this game, to Inter as well as Lyon, and even the Scudetto was in jeopardy.
You think even in mid-season?
I don't see Juve doing something rash like that.
I think only if they could get Allegri to come back.
Oh, if they could get Allegri to come back, I'm there with them in that meeting being like, dear God, please do this.
I'd be absolutely shocked if that happened. The other thing that which is a really good point I saw Andrea Agnelli made, and this is broader about Serie A. A few years, 10 years ago, he gave an interview to Simon Cooper in the FT, where he talked about how, you know, Serie A was like a millstone around Juve's neck, and it was dragging them down, blah, 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 and whatever else. This time, he made a different point. He said about how important it was for clubs to work together to grow revenue, especially overseas revenue, that domestically, he said the outlook for City is actually pretty bright because we've got really strong brands, big country, big economy, good domestic TV revenue. Where we need to grow is overseas commercial revenue and branding, but there's a ton of potential there. And he made the point that he thought, you know, La Liga, who commercially are the number two league right now, globally, how, you know, they're pretty much saturated. There's only, you know, they can't really go any higher than they are now, and even the Premier League and even the Bundesliga. So he saw margins for growth, and he was keen for people to, and he talked about how important it was people to work together to get this. This is not something that people in Italy or Italian club presidents have said in public very often, certainly not Juve ones, until very recently. And I find that really, really encouraging. That they're actually, you know, not just being provincial and saying, ooh, can I win another Scudetto? Can I do this? Can I screw you over? But they're actually saying, how can we work together and work together better to continue to boost our product? And
saying he wants other teams to also have superstars so they can also grow their
brand. That's one of the things he said, yeah. I've had no problem hammering Agnelli when he says stuff that I think is self-serving or stupid or I don't agree with. But I thought this was a great point that he made, and I'm really encouraged that he came out and he said that, and that hopefully he can lead the way in that. And hopefully, given that instead of snake oil salesmen and weirdos, we actually have real owners at some of the other Serie A clubs who have the ability to deliver this, I think that's encouraging.
Be careful, Gab. You might be a Juve fan now.
No.
So the other Champions League game with an Italian team this week was Napoli at home to Barcelona. It was...
There was another game this week.
There was another game. It was...
You're kidding. Come on. It's Messi's first time in Naples.
Messi's first time in Naples. Ciro Mertens getting level with Marek Hamšík as Napoli's all-time top scorer. This was... I had a lot of people on my timeline actually going crazy and saying it was an awful game. It was definitely a low events game, but it was kind of fascinating, I thought, for seeing how Gattuso would approach, like, it's the biggest game of his managerial career, for sure, and he took this ultra-cautious approach, ultra-defensive approach, that nearly paid off, like, it nearly worked, as it is, Barcelona did get the equaliser, finish 1-1. But what did you think? What did you think of Gattuso's approach in this one?
No shame. You should do exactly what it is that leads you to your points. I'm not one of those people who thinks that you should play... I mean, frankly speaking, Setien's non-stop possession football that led to... How many shots on goal did they have? One, which was the goal? Yeah. That's not for me any better.
I haven't seen the XG, the expected goals. I know Gab loves it. I haven't seen them, but I would imagine...
Do you prepare for the show, then?
I would imagine that Napoli... Do you know the?
Thank you.
Do you know the XG? Is that the?
No,
XG?
But I don't base my judgment on the XG.
So you also haven't. Right. You also haven't.
Because I don't need them to prepare.
Neither
for
do
this I watch the game.
I was going to throw to you on that.
Fight.
I'm in the Craig Burley camp when it comes to XG, as you know.
To me, it felt like if anything, Napoli would have been definitely the more likely side to win it, despite letting Barcelona have 70% of the ball, despite spending almost the entire game in their own half.
I'm sure, I don't think Rino Gattuso is
the most God's gift. To,
yeah. But equally, it's pretty obvious how you were going to play this game, because I presume he's got scouts and people who watched Barcelona under Quique Setién and what he's trying to do. He's a big believer in this possession. He's trying to channel Barcelona circa 2010 with Guardiola.
He's a bit useless possession more.
But No. I'm talking about what he's trying to do, not what he's actually doing. I agree with you. It's useless because until you get the chemistry and the movement right, you're not going to create the chances. The 2010 Barcelona created tons of chances. This Barcelona creates very little. And maybe it's not just chemistry or the movement. Maybe it's also... The fact that Messi's older and Griezmann's older.
The fact that his vertical points aren't as intelligent as the ones before.
Possibly. It could be all those things, right? I think Jordi Alba's absence actually in a game like this weighed a lot.
I agree with that.
But once you know that they're going to spend a lot of time playing in front of you, and Gattuso's a naturally conservative manager anyway, of course you're going to go and park the bus. And teams that have done that against Barcelona have actually, since Setién's been in, have actually had pretty good success. So, he did the play the percentages. He did the very obvious thing. I've got no problem with it whatsoever. Mm. And I just, the only thing is, I wanted the Greek god, Kostas Manolas, to...
You're really weird about this guy. You, really love him.
How can you not? It's an Italian thing. We love the Greeks. Una razza, una...
Yeah, I know. Everyone marries each other. But, I just don't think he is...
I'm sorry, we have neighbors who we like.
Yeah, I know, but he's just not that great of a defender,
No, but we can all agree these are two of, the best places to go and eat, Italy and Greece. I mean, I thought it was interesting, you can sort of...
So Kostas Manolas is the man who beat Barcelona single-handedly a couple years ago at Roma. Come on now.
You can super simplify
single-handedly.
You can super simplify it and say, you just parked the bus. I mean, to get into the detail a little bit, what Napoli did was very compact and central as well. It wasn't just sitting deep. It was sitting deep and occupying the middle part of the pitch hugely, which is why you saw Messi drifting out to the right front of the game, because he was trying to find some space. You've got to go somewhere... Go to the flanks, and that's what he had.
And you're conceding crosses, which means that given that you've got the Smurf squad in there,
Exactly.
There's no Kevin Prince Boateng anymore.
Because you've got a Greek god at centre-back, you've got the option of keeping it.
They couldn't get Braithwaite to come in, so...
The thing that I think hurts them, and it wasn't entirely clear to me whether this was in part an injury decision rather than a tactical decision, but I think the point at which Mertens went off, Napoli lost a little bit of that zip on the counter, which they needed. That's
this
not enough on Milik, because Milik, I love him as a striker. I think he does a lot.
Yeah, but he's not Mertens.
He's not this game. He's not this game where you just need to be able to break fast, because, it's wild when you look at the heat maps on Barcelona in this game. First of all, after Busquets by like one pass, the next most passing team is Piqué, and then like two passes behind Umtiti. So the players who are actually getting the ball were the two centre-backs, which is your dream as Napoli. Like, let Barcelona have the ball with their centre-backs rather than with the players who can hurt you. But the other thing is, if you see where they're positioned, Umtiti and Piqué for most of this game, it's genuinely in Napoli's half. That's how far forward they are. So when you've got Mertens and Insigne, that's your opportunity. Like, your opportunity is get that speed in behind. And with better finishing, they definitely could have won, because Insigne had
this
the
is
chance.
What it is. With better finishing, they could have done that. I thought it was a very mature game plan, to be honest, and the fact that they stuck to it. And I thought, once again, Barcelona walked into a match in which they thought their superiority was going to make the difference. And I don't think that they were willing to do a lot of the times the hard work. Sometimes they think hard work is getting the fouls that ended up with Vidal getting a red card, which was just stupid at this point.
And Busquets suspended for the return.
Busquets suspended, exactly that. When you add that to all the injury list, it turns into somewhat of a disaster. Messi has historically always had problems against Italian defences, but I think it's that they just thought Napoli would tire and that we'd get our time. They always fixate on the fact that they just think things will happen, and their assumptions are what has led them to lose to Roma, Barcelona, and potentially lose to Napoli. And I thought the difference here was that Napoli knew who they were. They're very much happy with the fact that, you know, we're going to go with this strategy, and it worked out for them. And I actually think that it's not too ridiculous to think they might win this.
The problem is that you I don't know that you have another way of playing this. So if you go and play this way again, in theory, you have to remember Napoli need to score now, Barcelona don't, in theory. But because it's Barcelona, you can't imagine them at home just sitting back and being like, all right, come for us. Like, so.
And their defence can always concede, right? Yeah. It's a defence that you don't really believe in. We don't know what's going to go on there any day of the week. It looks like they're capable for a downfall. And I don't know. There's a lot there in that midfield that I'm worried about without Busquets. You think, what are the alternatives? Frankie de Jong is not really able to impose his authority on every match. And a lot of the time, all they do is have the ball.
You got de Jong, Archer, Rakitic, or Poy is still... That's still a pretty good midfield. Well, these are the favorites. What percentage do we give Napoli?
40%.
Oh, I'm nowhere near that. I think I'm giving them like 5 or 10.
All right, I'm going to go 15.
Okay.
Really? Oh God, I'm really believing in Napoli now.
Bear in mind, the Barcelona have always been.
Do I get a prize if this happens? Yeah, I'm going to ask for a prize.
A prize.
Yes. Well, no, but bear in mind, I can see where Mina's coming from. Barcelona have the Clásico this weekend, right?
Yeah.
If they get housed in that, which admittedly is unlikely, I think that's going to have a big impact on the next leg. Because if they get destroyed in that game and all the bad stuff comes back, and Abidal and Messi and Bartomeu and, you know, there's fan protests, then it could really, really get tasty in the second leg.
You know what? If Dembele played, this would have been an easy Barcelona win. He would have been the guy that made that difference.
If my aunt had wheels, she'd be a bicycle.
I mean, this is the Serie A Awesome podcast, so putting Champions League aside, let's get back to what really matters, which is the title race. And it's the big derby. I'm joking, Gab. Gab really hates us calling it what it is. So we shall call it the big Juventus versus Inter match. Uh-huh. When two really annoying coaches take each other on. And as we all know, coronavirus has spread quite a lot in northern Italy. And obviously, the authorities have taken precautions. This game is supposed to be behind closed doors. That was, or that seems to be, the decision that has been taken. Although it remains a fluid situation, we don't know what's going to happen. This changes every day. But as we all know, a lot of matches were cancelled last week. A lot of them will have to continue because it's a very congested schedule. But the way to ensure public health and safety is to play them behind closed doors.
Yeah, so we're taping this on Thursday lunchtime.
Mm-hmm. UK time.
UK time, yes. The decision was made to play it behind.
Isn't it the morning?
Sorry?
Isn't it the morning?
Well, by the time we finish, it'll be lunch. Depends when you eat your lunch. The decision was taken. It was announced by the Minister for Sport. However, as the situation keeps evolving, there's talk that it could be changed, it could be reversed, it could be interpreted differently. There's a certain level of confusion here, but the decision has been made to play the game behind closed doors, which doesn't mean it won't be reversed. So if people are a little confused about that,
I mean, it's just a snapshot, but on Monday, you literally have within maybe like an hour of each other, like the Minister for Sport saying, yes, the ban does include up to and including Sunday the 1st. So that means no games will take place with fans present on Sunday the 1st. Within an hour of that, you had, I think, Agnelli saying, well, we don't know yet whether or not it's going to be. Well, so there's always been this.
What Agnelli actually said is he said the ban in Piedmont.
Yeah.
Ends on Saturday night, so the game's on Sunday. So, but you've had both the head of the FA and the Minister for Sport and the government decree. The thing about the government decrees, those are emergency power decrees. They can all change and adapt based on the time. And again, for people who don't know, just to be clear on this, it's not just a football thing. It's a ban on all public gatherings, which has already been relaxed in some cases, but that's meant that, you know, concerts, Milan Fashion Week,
Armani show,
the Armani, yeah, of course, it was huge. All these things, huge. What you don't want is a large group of people in close proximity to each other because they think that might spread the virus. And right now what they're trying to do, they've tested more people, they're just testing enormous amounts of people, and they just want to figure out where it is, and obviously the more people move around and spread it, and that's going to make it more difficult, especially because the incubation period is so long. I think in practical terms in football, as Mina said, you can't postpone any more games because there's nowhere in the calendar to put them, at least for the teams that are involved in Europe.
Yeah.
But I think what's going to be interesting for Inter is obviously they're playing Thursday night against Ludogorets. They didn't play last weekend. I'm not sure, given how much Conte likes to plan. I think his original plan was to, you know, they were 2-0 up from the first leg against Ludogorets to, you know, play largely reserves. I'm not sure he's going to do that. I think, you know, again, in the Europa League, I mean, I think this is something that could seriously mess with his plans and his build-up, given how paranoid and how...
And so what, you think that if they don't have match fitness, so he might play...
Well, it's just a long time to go without playing your starters, right?
I think, because we haven't made this clear, there was 4 out of 6 of games on Sunday last weekend got suspended, in case anyone didn't know that. And one of those games was Inter against Sampdoria.
Yeah.
So Inter have now not played since...
For a week.
...the Europa League.
Exactly.
First leg.
So it will be 10 days without a game.
If they reach, obviously, the game against Juventus.
This is just the Juventus game, if it happens on Sunday.
Yeah, so then that would be 10 days without. So you think that he might play some of his starters to get match fitness now against Ludogorets?
I think it's going to affect his preparation. I think it's going to give him more to think about. And I think sometimes when Conte thinks too much...
It gets really nasty.
Yeah, things get a little bit complicated. I mean, the obvious thing for me is...
Don't worry about it. Look at Juve paying and then think you've got what you've got in the bag.
My main question is, do you shoehorn, because I think you have to play Eriksen or Sainsy, who I'm not even sure if he's going to be fit, but you have to have one quality player in there, right? You've got one guy who can pass the ball in midfield. Is he going to do that?
I think he's going to give Brozovic a rest, and I think he'll play Eriksen in this Europa League.
No. I mean against Juve.
Against Juve, I think.
Like, is Brozovic really once again going to be the only passer in?
No. I think either Sensi or Eriksen will
they
come.
Have
it depends.
To play, right?
Yeah, of course they will. But then you don't know. Maybe he'll go with a really hard-working midfield to try to suffocate Juve's.
Right, and then draw and like, oh, well, we're still so far
I don't know
behind.
Because Rabiot has so much of poses such a threat that they might need to have like a lot of defenders against him.
I think there's so many like extra threats that have been thrown up by the situation, in particular, which make it more complicated than before. I think that. If Inter play last weekend and beat Sampdoria, they're 3 points behind Juventus because they haven't played that. Sure, they've got the game in hand, but right now they are 6 points behind. Yeah. So if they lose this game now, it feels
catastrophic. Ronaldo penalty in the 87th minute and you're 9 points
everyone
back.
Everyone keeps talking about this in a way that's suggesting that, you know, oh, what a terrible thing to have happened. But they also are well rested. They're coming into this match without the anxiety of having lost a game and, you know, like, you never know.
Well,
like, maybe
also,
this is a great thing.
Well, they might yet lose to Ludogorets, which
yeah, I mean, they could,
anxiety
yeah.
might come back.
I just kind of feel like that's not going to happen.
I mean,
right?
There's also the opposite point, which is if this game is behind closed doors, that's a huge loss to Juventus. Like, Juventus have only lost away from home this season. Like, their home is their fortress. It has been ever since they got that stadium built. Mm. If you have to play it without fans, of course that's a huge damage to you. So it is for both of them.
Yeah,
but
of course.
I'm just saying, in terms of the game pressure, I think for Inter, even to play for a draw here feels worse as long as you have that 6-point gap. that the potential to be 9 points behind, I think, feels, even though the game in hand is there, even though you've always got it, feels psychologically damaging in a way that it wouldn't if that game had been played. And
no question about it. I was just laughing, just thinking, like, it's behind closed doors, but you know how Juve do that stupid light show that's like that very, like, 1990s thing?
It's
like,
not, this, you they know. Do this in Germany too, which everyone loves.
Oh, yes. Those are the other cutting edge paragons of style and entertainment. And whatever. It's stuff that they used to do in NBA games 25 years ago. But anyway, I wonder, are they still going to do it if it's an empty stadium? Because presumably they paid for it.
No, of course not.
But they've paid for it. Why not?
Well, who are they going to do it for? The players? the one cameraman who's there with, like, a mask on.
There will be, I mean, behind closed doors normally doesn't mean no press. So I imagine there'll be press there. Even
I'm sure the press will be entertained, yeah.
But,
Will Agnelli be there?
Yeah, of course he'll be there.
Do you think he'll be there wearing one of those radiation suits?
No, can you imagine? But, like, in all honesty about this potential game and how you think it's going to go, listen, obviously I've never believed in Conte sides against, you know, like, quality play.
And it's not going to be a problem here.
This is exactly what it is. That's exactly where the point is, you know. And they've beaten, I think, only one team in the top five. The others are basically mostly draws or a loss. So, but considering the way that Juventus are playing, considering the fact that they seem to be regressing rather than progressing, is this a potential, like, you know, loss, really, for Juve?
Of course.
Honestly, this game to me feels incredibly unpredictable. Because Juventus, if they're as poor as they were against Lyon, could lose to anybody. I mean, they're really poor.
But Chiellini will be back.
But I don't trust Inter either. Like, I don't have some massive faith in the Inter side, the way they've played lately, so.
I have trust in Chiellini. Because with him on the pitch, they didn't concede to Spal.
there's an argument that, because, you know, when teams defend, like, right, obviously in modern football, it's much more about imposing yourself on the opposition, right? And then that often means that teams that attack all the time aren't that comfortable when they just sit deep and defend, right? Juve under Allegri, like Atletico Madrid, were very comfortable sitting back and defending. Mm. De Ligt, obviously he didn't do that at Ajax. He's still learning that, right? So if you go Bonucci Chiellini, you might actually have a situation where those two guys say, hey, everybody just sit deep and descend and defend. Let's ride it out and let's wait for Cristiano. And it might actually work.
And oh, it might, so you think they'll take that approach?
I'm not suggesting that, but I'm thinking, if I were Sarri, I might be more comfortable doing that, given that Chiellini, because if I'm going to play a higher line with Chiellini, who's only just back from injury, who's older, and who hasn't had time to work on the movements involved in a high line, you know, with Bonucci.
Why not just Chiellini and De Ligt?
Oh, just get rid of Bonucci? Because Bonucci's going to tantrum, and he's going to, if you do that.
Well, I don't really care if he has a tantrum. I'm not here to satisify players on the team.
Well, Chiellini's
I'm here
never
to win.
Has Chiellini ever played with De Ligt?
No, but I think it might be a good game to start it, in all honesty.
That would be a huge call.
Do you know
call.
Why? Because Chiellini is an authority, and De Ligt is good at playing a high line. I don't think that they should play deep against this team. I don't know. And honestly, I think it'll be tragic if they're playing in their own stadium, behind closed doors or not, to be the side that has less possession than Inter.
But why? That's been most of their history.
I mean, Inter, as we know, and as we've talked about all season, it'll be a shock if Inter don't play deep themselves. Like, Inter play deep and look for the vertical moves. That's what they've always done under Conte. It's this season.
At least they're
capable. You're
really
selling this game, Nikki.
I think it's a fascinating game. Playing deep doesn't mean being boring. Like, Lazio play deep. They're brilliant. Like, no, that's not
so
boring to play deep.
Lazio is necessarily laugh a minute entertainment, but yeah.
So entertaining.
Lazio
play
pretty
play well.
Season.
I would, but yeah.
I think Atleti play well.
I think that's a, yeah, I think to paint deep as boring is a misunderstanding of the tactical moment. I think we've had
when
a very
both teams
long period.
Play deep, though, you can. What kind of vertical are you going to do?
Well, that's yes, and
that's what I'm saying. Like.
But this is what I mean about the stakes of this game. I think it's thrown everything such a weird loop because I don't know now who wants to gamble more. Like, who needs to win this game more?
Sarri needs to gamble.
I would argue Inter needs to win this game more.
I think you're right.
No.
I think this is where they say, let's man up, let's deliver a knockout punch and figure out whether we're in this title race or whether we just go and play Thursday night the rest of the season.
If Conte loses this match, he's still a hero. Let's
exactly.
be honest, yeah? But if Sarri loses this match, he might get sacked.
He's not going to get sacked.
Okay, but
he'll still go and win the Serie A or have a shot.
We don't know if that's going to happen. If they lose to Inter, we don't know if they're going to win Serie A. And I think that it's going
to
put his position.
There's a very good chance Lazio are top at the end of the weekend.
Exactly.
No, that might be right, but Juve still have a title race to play for if they lose.
Yeah, but I think that it puts his. I think that basically Conte can lose this match and preserve his reputation. I don't think the same can be said for Sarri.
Preserve his reputation, but this is like a free hit, right? I mean, look. If Conte, if Conte finishes third this year in Serie A behind Lazio and Inter, it's his first season, it is what it is, right? And he's got no benefit from being more conservative here and hoping that Juve drop points later.
Yeah, but it's still Antonio Conte.
I think this is where you go for the jugular for Inter. Not be disappointed again? If Conte doesn't.
He should do that.
Absolutely.
I agree with that.
I'd like to hear percentages again for this one because I think it's worth remembering as well the first time these teams met. In Milan, there was no question that Juventus were better. No question. Juventus definitely outplayed Inter that day.
Yeah, it's one of the five games Juventus played well this season.
So I think three games.
So, so we're going into this game, and how do you see it, percentages?
50-50.
I think 40% Juve, 40% the draw, 20% Inter.
Okay. So you're putting the draw in there, okay.
You just ruined it, didn't
you? Yeah, that's made it more...
Oh, no, now we got to think. What adds up to 100?
Actually, a draw is very good.
I think
very good shout there, Gam.
It's not wrong to put the draw quite high, so I'm going to go... God, I can't say exactly the same numbers, can I?
You can, Nikki,
I think you're right. 40-40-20, that's how I feel.
Or you can pull the weasel move and go 39-41-20.
I like the numbers you've chosen, actually. I think you're right.
Forza Lazio, huh?
All right, so elsewhere in Serie A, there's been other stuff going on, of course. Milan last week got really angry. They drew at Fiorentina. They were extremely angry because of the penalty that Fiorentina got late on. And by the way, I think they were right on that one. If you remember that Romagnoli-Cutrone had, going shoulder to shoulder, Cutrone falls to the ground because Romagnoli is stronger and possibly more of a man than he is. And they give a penalty. And then Ibrahimovic also got screwed in that wolvesy way where, like, the ball hits his arm. Then he still does a lot of stuff to score, but under the rules, I guess, had to be called back. But I still think there's still a good vibe and a good bounce for now, at least in terms of results and what they can do around this Milan team.
I think that they are... When they play well, they play very well. And when they command the ball and I think that the side has been amazing in 2020. But I do worry about the fact that they show vulnerabilities and sometimes at the wrong moments. They are missing that cynicism that you need to be, somebody that finishes in a top four position, in my opinion. I do think that Fiorentina sort of waking up and trying a little more in the second half, despite the fact that they went a man down, it should have been managed better by Milan. I don't want to place this on Pioli or whoever it is. I do think it's a case of it is still a young squad. It is a squad that it has had a terrible season of up and down, so it is trying to get its feet back together and all of that. But I'll be honest, it's a match they shouldn't have lost. Right. And the fact that they lost it makes me worried.
Who's finishing higher, Milan or Napoli this year?
I think it's Napoli.
Napoli are trending in a better direction, but I don't know.
We don't know. Yeah, it's difficult. Yeah.
I think Milan are finishing higher. Their level on points.
Because your performance, because you base everything on performances, And so I understand that because Milan are producing better performances than Napoli. But I do think that there is that quality of the individual. Milan really only have one to rely on. And I think that Napoli have a few more.
Milan only have one quality individual.
No, but Napoli have more match winners. I understand what Milan's getting at.
Theo.
I don't think he's a match winner. And
Theo.
Firstly, he's a really good, don't get me wrong, he's really good at going forward, but he's not the guy I'm going to depend on coming back either. There's still so much the guy needs to learn.
Alright.
And Rebic is, he's having the field day, don't get me wrong. But when you think of Dries Mertens, when you think of sort of Zielinski, I don't know, there's a little bit more there, right?
Time will tell, I guess. Roma also, a bit of a bounce last week. It's a weird situation because obviously the ownership situation is still up in the air.
It should be done soon, no?
I know, but we've been saying that for the last two months. Yeah. So, but your boy Fonseca, you still in love? Here's a question.
Yeah.
Would you swap Sarri for Fonseca?
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, at least Fonseca knows what to do with a team and how to readjust positions and maybe sometimes change tactics. Not entirely sure Sarri knows how to do that.
He's more handsome than Sarri, too.
He is also very handsome, and he doesn't have a cigarette butt in his mouth. But with this, I'd like to say that Fonseca did a good job, and he did, and the team were fantastic to watch. But Lecce were without, like, hardly any offensive players, and with, like, a really a squad that's, like, void of all its major talents. So I don't know what to think of this, but I'm happy because I think that this will give them the confidence boost that they require to keep pushing forward.
When they lost, what, like, 3 in a row, 4 yeah. in a row?
Yeah.
But now it's 2 clean sheets in a row. They won in the Europa League. You know?
True. My fantasy scenario is the one where Roma end up in 4th place and Atalanta win the Champions League. So we get 5 teams in there next year. How awesome would that be?
Well, actually, I'd rather Juve won it, but you know.
I think, yeah. Atalanta are the team I feel most confident about being in the next round of the Champions League. So
who would have thought that? Yeah, huh?
Not surprised. All right, do you
That's
have
it?
Oh, yeah, we need to talk about those guys.
Yeah.
All right.
He says it with a smile.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, they beat Genoa. It's not necessarily a game that moves on the narrative for Lazio much. They were good again. They got
Milinkovic-Savic was really good again.
Milinkovic-Savic was fantastic.
You know, it's funny because I think we often think of teams and players as constants, right? Yeah. But especially given the way they play, they have a bunch of guys who maybe aren't necessarily superstars, but they're very good players who can pretend they're superstars for like a month or 2 months at a time.
Yeah.
And so I kind of feel that Milinkovic-Savic has really over the past month kicked it up several notches to the point where he can carry a team. And I think that could be key because if Immobile stops scoring, and I've been saying this for a long time, he really should at some point.
How confident are you that's going
to
happen?
If Luis Alberto comes down to earth, you know, having Milinkovic-Savic who can raise his game,
but he can't score an away goal.
He does other things, you know.
and
you know, having Caicedo who can step up, having Correa in his own way. I think
Johnny's doing a job, isn't he?
Yeah.
You didn't like him at first.
No.
He's basically a winger playing wide, and so in Italy you're going to get hammered every time somebody beats you down that side.
Do
you believe
him? They play before Inter Lazio this weekend, right? They must.
Everybody does.
Yeah, so there's a chance for Lazio, at least for a moment, to be top of the league.
For a couple hours. Yeah. How about that?
And Inzaghi could have so nearly been a Juventus boss.
Well, it's funny because Andrea Agnelli addressed that point. He addressed the fact that he's known both Inzaghi brothers for 30 years going back, because I guess they're all roughly the same age, probably going back to when he was a kid hanging around the Juve.
So then he knew Paratici for 30 years too.
I know Paratici and Inzaghi are close. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't think Paratici is like an attachment of Inzaghi.
They were next door neighbors, so if you knew one.
No, I know, but I mean, I would imagine that Paratici has enough of a life of his own that when Pippo Inzaghi was playing for Juve in the late 90s and little Andrea Agnelli was watching him, I would assume Paratici wasn't there too. But I don't know. Maybe he's like Zelig. Maybe
you
he's
never
there.
Know.
Maybe he's there throughout. All right, time for knee-jerk reactions.
How well do you know your next door neighbors, Mina? That's what I'm thinking.
My knee-jerk reaction is one that...
He's so excited about his knee-jerk reaction.
No,
he's not even willing to listen to what you... Yes.
There's two ways to read this, because the analytics people came out and said, maybe you're reading this all wrong, right?
Mm.
But the legendary Mr. Chip, Alexis, on Twitter, he put out the stat, which is that since Cristiano Ronaldo has been at Juve, he has taken 38 free kicks in all competitions, and he has scored as many as Nicky, which is to say, 0.
Oh, I was like, Nicky, how many have you gotten? Yeah.
What I found most worrying was that 24 of them have hit the wall. Now, obviously, this comes in the context of the fact that Juve have two guys who've both been pretty good free kick takers in Miralem Pjanic and Paulo Dybala. Given it's Cristiano Ronaldo, and given we love to depict him as sort of this cartoonish egotist who wants to be all me, and wants to do everything and is a diva, the knee-jerk reaction from many would be to say, hey, Cristiano, stop hogging the ball. Let the other guys take it once in a while. Is that fair?
Well, I mean, Ganesh did take one against Leon. Okay.
He took one! Enough, yes. Let's burn him at the stake.
We should, really. Since 2017, no free kick. I'm voting in favor of not letting him take any more for a while. Yes.
Yeah, but you have, I mean...
It depends on position. It depends on footedness, obviously.
No, listen. I just feel like, you know, you score all the penalties. You're the guy and everything. Like, let's just leave the free kicks, you know? Share the wealth.
What worries me, and I think you need to do a deeper analysis, is that 24 of them have hit the wall. Now, I'm assuming...
Maybe their opponents are all very tall.
I'm assuming a fair portion of this is when it's far away and he's trying to belt it through the wall. But some of those undoubtedly are ones that were closer in, where you're trying to get it up and over the wall. Now that's something Pjanic and Dybala, especially Pjanic, have a good history of doing, and he does not. So this might be something that, that they rethink. That said, the analytics people said, don't be too harsh on Ronaldo, because the cumulative pre-shot expected goals of those 38 was actually 1.64. So
he's missed out on 1.64 goals.
Yeah, it could simply be variance. But obviously, because it's Cristiano, you know, that stat like looms large.
He did score 11 in a row, so
I think there's more to it than that, because, like, I don't know how expected goals takes into account the fact that, well, not, I do know
how tall the opponent
is. I would like to know what the expected goals on, for instance, Miralem Pjanic is, or his free kicks the last couple of years. Because the fact is that Pjanic, whatever your criticisms of him, has scored free kicks for over a number of seasons. Yeah. So is that not just that he's a player who doesn't perform to his expected goals, whereas others do?
Nine in Serie A since 2016.
Yeah.
I mean, look, neither of them is Andrea Pirlo, so it doesn't really matter, right?
Or Siniša Mihajlović.
My knee-jerk reaction isn't very profound. It's just that after seeing Dries score that goal in the Messi Maradona match Hamzik at the top of Napoli's all-time scoring charts, I continue to feel saddened by the prospect that he might leave at the end of the season. I think Napoli need to sort their thinking out and get him that contract done, because I think he should end his career there. I think that's what he should do.
They're definitely going to renew it, surely, now.
Well, for now, there is no progress on that. For now, it's not been done.
Right. We shall end it with my knee jerk, which will undoubtedly be the most profound I joke. But, you know, it's funny. Bonucci said and Chiellini said and all these people said at the time that it was going to take, you know, until minimum February for Juventus to see the power of Sarri. And to have his sort of game infiltrate the players. What I think is so interesting is Nicola at Genoa needed, what, 3 games for all of that to happen? You know, they went from being the world's worst team in Serie A to being a side that managed to get 2 goals against Lazio, that has beaten Bologna 3-0, that is just a side that looks like they have a strategy, a game plan, a lot of confidence for a team that's fighting relegation, and a belief in themselves. And I just feel like this is sometimes what great coaching is. And he did wonders with Crotone. And now I just think, I really want to see this guy stay on. And I hope he always, he gets better and better.
Nicola to Juve after Sarri fails to beat Leon?
No, I mean, let's go with Inzaghi first. Yeah. Like, I don't know. I mean, I still want Zidane. Zidane, please, or Allegri, whichever one of you want us, I'm there and willing. But that's all we have time for. Let's see what happens next week, when we shall bring you the results of the great, no, not the derby, it's Juventus versus Inter. We'll see you then. Take care.